We live in an angry world. Have any of you been watching the presidential debates in the US? Or do you ever watch any kind of election debate, whether it be a municipal or a provincial or a federal level? There's a lot of anger in the world. And yes, we want our leaders to be passionate, but often we cross the line into someone like anger or rage. King Solomon was obviously a keen observer of people. And look at what he writes in Proverbs 15, verse 1. Proverbs 15, verse 1. A gentle answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. Let's pray just for a minute. Father, we're looking at the Proverbs and what we have to say about relationships. And it's amazing how practical it is, how insightful it is when it comes to relationships. And I pray for every one of us that you will bring changes and adjustments to us. That we would be a voice of reason, we would be a voice of calm and peace and gentleness in the midst of wrath and anger, even rage. Wherever we go, so that you and your love and your peace would just really be true. You are working on this. When the fire of anger is burning, you can douse it or you can stir it. You can douse it when the fire of anger is burning. Solomon says, you're a gentle, soft, or tender answer turns away wrath. In the face of such an anger, calmness and peace can push anger back. So if you can use your imagination, it's like a beast, it's like a wild animal, when faced with calmness and peace and gentleness, this wild animal stops in its tracks, turns around, and retreats. That's the kind of picture that Solomon paints here. Now there are times to be assertive, and to stand up for what is just and right. I'm not saying for a moment that Jesus called us to be nice. I'll check the Bible and nowhere does it use the word, go and be nice. That is just sort of a cultural thing that we've all taken on. And it's an effort to be politically correct. We all want to be nice. I'm not talking about that. There are times when we have to stand against sin and unrighteousness and injustice. There is no doubt about that. However, more often than we want to admit, we are called to live out mercy. If we were to be painfully honest with ourselves, not often are we motivated by righteous anger. I would say probably 9 times, maybe even more out of 10, we are motivated by unrighteous anger. And that is what Solomon is addressing. What is it that we should do in the face of this kind of anger? Jesus taught in Matthew 5, 38 and 39. This is the word of Jesus. Radically different in Matthew 5, 38 and 39. You have heard that it was said, eye for eye and tooth for tooth. But I tell you, do not resist an evil person. If someone strikes you on the right cheek, turn to him the other also. The next time someone is upset with you, try this. Rather than going toe-to-toe physically or verbally, take a deep breath and reply to them calmly and gently. If the guy who pulled the punching bag out of his trunk, you're going to get completely surprised looks. Not long ago, there was this traffic controller guy, and Brent and I were driving along the road where our family farm used to sit. And you're noticing that houses are starting to spring up where living things are being built on the new side of us. But one day, Brent and I decided, in the light of these houses springing up, we wanted to slip in there and get a photo or two. Just at the time we pulled in for a photo, some big trucks were hauling in some big culverts, and the traffic guy on the road was getting upset with us. He said, "You gotta be in there, this is private." And everything in me wanted to hop out of my vehicle in Manhattan and tell him, "Hey buddy, this used to be our farm." But I thought that. Instead, I smiled and I waited. And the guy just changed. And he later on waved to us as we rolled away. He smiled. A gentle answer turns away why. Calm response comes from a calm mind and a calm heart. It's not something that's going to often happen if it's not inside. You need to bring the good things out of the good stored up in you. If it's in turmoil, if there's anger going on inside there, if there's impatience, if you're in a rush and it seems like no one is cooperating with you, it is a matter of time before that's going to burst out between your lips or through your hands. One way, that kind of anger is going to pour in there. In order to calm down, you might need to go for a walk. French writer Joseph Hubert advised about 200 years ago the best remedy for a short temper is a long walk. Now there is an observance. The upside is you might get some much needed exercise or see some of the countryside that you have never seen before. The Apostle Paul directs it in Ephesians 4:26, not to let the sun go down while you are still in. I have learned that this underlines a commitment to work things out thoughtfully more than advice to stay up late while you're tired and hardened somewhere. I have learned that it's surprising how much a good night's sleep can change my attitude and perspective. Paul was saying, do I believe in Ephesians 4:26, don't let too much time go by before you work it out. And sometimes the best thing that can happen for you is that you take a step back. Go for a walk, go for a drive, even go for a sleep, and get a fresh perspective. With such fair skin and now with a bald head, I've had my share of sunburns over the years, hence the nickname from my family, Shaver. One of the last things that I want to do when I have a sunburn is to have a hot shower or jump into a hot tub. If you choose to treat any kind of burn at home, place a cool compress over it to relieve the pain and the swelling. You may do this for 5 to 15 minutes and then remove the compress. Avoid using ice or extremely cold compresses because they can aggravate the burn. Now let's think about relationships for a minute. If you are too cold in the face of anger, in other words, uncaring and disinterested, you will actually provoke the anger further. But if you have a cool response, not a cold response, a cool response, a gentle answer can draw the heat out of a volatile situation. Consider how Jesus responded in the midst of anger in the Gospel of Luke 22. Luke 22, starting at verse 49 through 15. When Jesus' followers saw what was going to happen, they said, "Lord, should you strike with a sword?" And one of them struck the servant of the high priest, cutting off his right ear. But Jesus answered, "No more of this," and touched the man's ear and healed him. While they were in the garden praying, Judas led the soldiers come and arrest Jesus. John 18:10 tells us that it was Peter, who was known to act a time or two or speak a time or two before thinking. Matthew 26:52-54 adds this. Matthew 26:52, "Put your sword back in its place," Jesus said to him, "for all who draw the sword will die by the sword. Do you think I cannot call on my Father, and he will at once put at my disposal more than 12 legions of angels? But how then would the scriptures be fulfilled that say it must happen in this way?" Jesus demonstrates great security in who he is. Great security in who he is and the resources available. A Roman legion in those days would be 5,000 to 6,000 soldiers. You do the math. He says 12 legions. So we're talking maybe 60,000 to 72,000, not men, angels at his disposal in the garden. Yet he refuses to use them, to call upon them. Instead, Jesus voluntarily laid his life down, turned the other cheek, you might say, because he knew the Father's plan was unfolding, even through men that were filled with rage. They wanted to get rid of Jesus. And this security from Jesus drove great self-control and empowered him to respond to aggression with compassion. In our culture, we often think if someone is going to be strong, you're not going to let people walk all over. Actually, he is great power under the world. And it's this kind of gentleness that Jesus demonstrates and empowers us to walk in as we submit to him in us, as we walk with him. That great theologian, Smokey the Bear, provides some tips for extinguishing your campfire. SmokeyBear.com provides these tips. Allow the wood to burn completely to ash, if possible. Put water on the fire. Brown all embers, not just the red ones. Pour until hissing sound stops. If you do not have water, stir dirt or sand into the embers with a shovel to bury the fire. With your shovel, scrape any remaining sticks and logs to remove any embers. Make sure that no embers are exposed and still smoldering. Continue adding water, dirt, or sand and stirring with the shovel until all material is cool. Now let's keep looking at this list here. I wonder if we could adapt these tips for extinguishing your interpersonal campfire. Allow the one who is upset with you to burn completely to ash, while you refuse to add fuel by becoming defensive. Let them burn themselves out. Pour lots of water on the fire by taking responsibility for what you have said and done. Drown all embers, not just the red ones, by truly seeking to listen and understand. Pour until hissing sound stops. Most conflicts will subside if only one person is venting. Eventually, the hissing sound usually stops. If you do not have water, stir dirt or sand into the embers with a shovel to bury the fire. Choose responses that will extinguish rather than fan the fire of anger. Pick your shovel, scrape any remaining sticks and logs to remove any embers. Make sure that no embers are exposed and still smolder. Search out the cause of the anger by asking questions. Often, the issue is not really the issue. I can't tell you how many times Brenda and I have been arguing, and I realize that not always admitted it, that the issue is no longer really the issue. It's about some other thing. Not about the nail. You've got the thing. It's not about the nail. It's often about how tired I am, how frustrated I am by other people, and you just happen to be staring me in the face, and you're getting on my nerves. Or it's how we've been dealing with the conflict. It's not necessarily the issue, it's how we've been dealing with the issue. Continue adding water, dirt, or sand, and stirring with a shovel until all material is clear. Your listening ears and calm words go a long way to help cooling things in those around. It's amazing how effective this is. Rather than fighting fire with fire, will you choose to start fighting fire with water? Will you start dousing anger around? Will you make that commitment today? I mean, a solid commitment. Maybe there's anger in you or you that the Lord needs to do. And if there is, if this fire is raging on you, please pay attention to it and deal with it so you have the inner strength to allow the Prince of Peace flow through in the relationship settings. Will you ask the Lord to use you to turn away the wrath with gentle actions? When the fire of anger is burning, you can douse it or you can stir it. A harsh word stirs up anger. If you sat around a campfire, you've noticed that if the fire is allowed to burn long enough, it will eventually go up. And if the chill of the air in the night becomes too much, you need to get up, find a long stick, stir up the wood and the ashes, then add another log. Add more fuel to the fire. And whether we do it consciously or unconsciously, we can often stir people up. We can inadvertently add fuel to the fire. And so this thing turns into a raging bonfire when all along it should have just been a gentle crackling. It seems that Nabal, whose name means foolish, senseless, or wicked, had a knack for stirring up anger. How would you like to go through life with the name Nabal? Fool imprinted on your forehead. One recorded example is found in 1 Samuel 25, verses 4 to 13. 1 Samuel 25, and this was when David and his men were fleeing from King Saul before David became king. And while David was in the desert, he heard that Nabal was shearing sheep. So he sent 10 young men and said to them, "Go up to Nabal at Carmel and greet him in my name. Say to him, 'Long life to you, good health to you and your household, and good health to all that is yours.' Now I hear that it is sheep shearing time. When your shepherds were with us, we did not mistreat them, and the whole time they were at Carmel, nothing of theirs was missing. Ask your own servants, and they will tell you. Therefore, be favorable toward my young men, since we come at a festive time. Please give your servants and your son David whatever you can find." When David's men arrived, they gave Nabal this message in David's name. Then they waited. Nabal answered David's servants, "Who is this David Who is this son of Jesse? Many servants are breaking away from their masters these days. Why should I give my bread and water and the meat I have slaughtered for my shearers and give it to men coming from who knows where? David's men turned around and went back. When they arrived, they reported every day. David said to his men, "Put on your swords." So they put on their swords, and David put on his. About 400 men went up with David, while 200 stayed with the supplies. Nabal, that day, stirred up anger in David and his men. His wife, Abigail, on the other hand, was a quick thinker. She could see that disaster was coming unless something was done to douse the fire of anger. Whereas her husband Nabal had stirred up the fire, she was about to douse it. So she offered them abundant food and drink and served as a peacemaker in a volatile situation. If you assume the motives of others, you will stir up anger. When the last time you caught yourself thinking, "I know why they're doing it. They're just, or they're just doing it for this reason." Beware of assuming the motives of others. As much as I try, I am not a very good mind reader. And I guess that you aren't either. You and I can't really know the motives of the people around us. So stop trying to guess. Stop trying to assume that you do know what motivates others. If you guess these motives, or if you come across as condescending, you will add fuel to the fire. You know, if you think that you are somehow superior and this person is less than you, that will come across in an instant. And that will provoke more anger. It will add fuel to the fire. If you try to touch an angry person, even gently touch them, you will probably cause a surge in blood pressure in the angry person. I have tried this even with Brenda, a gentle touch on your knee, a patronizing sort of hot, you know, that went over like a lead balloon. Beware of that. They need space. You can't try to get into their space and try to soothe them and calm them by giving them a nice pat. Just let them be for a little bit. Because if you get too close, who knows what will happen. If being right is more important to you than the relationship, I can predict the temperature in the room. It's going to get quite hot for a little bit, and then a cold front will move in. It'll then quite chilly. If being right is more important to you than the relationship. It's possible to be completely right in the content of what you say, but completely wrong in the method or timing of your delivery. I have learned that the hard way. You might have all the greatest words to say, but if the time isn't right, just bite your tongue. Wait for the opportunity. Even go back and consider how you're going to say it. Because how you're going to say something can be even more important than what you say. A truthful but insensitive response can generate more heat than light when tension is on. Have you been in those situations where there may be a lot of truth being spoken and a lot of good stuff even you're getting off your chest, but there is more heat than light in the conversation? Canadian writer Lawrence J. Peter was probably speaking from experience when he warned, "Speak when you are angry, and will make the best speech you'll ever regret." I have given a few of those speeches on my lifetime. Don't try this at home, but sometimes around the farm, we would pour some gas on a pile of wood or garbage that we wanted to burn quickly and completely. It is amazing how well even damp wood and soggy garbage will burn when doused in gasoline. If you have the right fuel, that fire is going to do really well. Forbes.com provides 7 steps for dealing with angry customers. The thought process was taken right out of the book of Proverbs and given a modern twist on it. Listen to the wisdom in these steps. 1, remain calm. 2, don't take it personally. 3, use your best listening skills. 4, actively sympathize. 5, apologize gracefully. 6, find a solution. 7, take a few minutes on your own. I am not here to sell you Apple shares, and he is going to search into Apple. And one of the things that I really found Apple is good at is Apple Care, customer support. You call them, their 1-800 number, the toll-free number, and one of the first things they do is really listen and empathize with. Can you imagine the frustration level of people who are going for IT support on the phone? Their frustration level typically is very high. They're about to snap, and you better hide the gun. But when they phone, there is this soothing, empathetic voice at the other end of the line. And they say, "I appreciate your problem. Let's find a solution." That makes such a difference. When someone comes alongside you and truly takes a few minutes to understand where you're coming from. Likewise, you have to do that for the people around us. And really take a few minutes to step into their shoes and empathize and understand, rather than trying to defend or correct. There are times when you need to do that, but more often than not, we are wise to use a gentle answer to turn away. And learning that being well-rested is essential to handling conflict. In the early 1990s, I was a Christian education pastor, and I looked after children's programs and adult education. And I remember, like it was last week, on a Wednesday, we had a great big children's program running, and we had kids being bussed in. And I had a frustrating day. We were short-staffed, and things weren't going right. And at the end of the evening, one of the parents came to me with it. And I'll tell you, it did not go well. And largely, the reason it didn't go well was because of me. How I knew. I was tired. I was frustrated. I was ready to punch someone else. And they came to me with a criticism that I took personally. And I came to this. There was a guy telling his friend that he and his wife had serious arguments. But it ended, he said, when she came crawling to me on her hands and knees. "Oh, what did she say?" the friend asked. "Husband," he said, "she said, 'Come out from under that bed, you coward.'" The first shot fired in the Hatfield and McCoy story was the murder of Asa Harmon McCoy. But there were other factors that added to the conflict. From 1880 to 1891, there were 2 dozen people that killed combined from both ends. This hostility went on needlessly for years because each side refused to turn away wrath with a gentle answer. The violence earned the Hatfield and McCoy legendary status as America's go-to feud, something that has continued to this day. Even though the families announced a truce in 1891, they didn't shake hands until 1976. Over time, the two families continued to feud over land rights, including a legal battle over ownership of a cemetery in the year 2000. Finally, in the year 2003, in a public appearance on CBS Saturday Early Show, descendants from the families drew up a contract and signed it live on television. They wanted to show, after 9/11, that if the most deep-seated family feud can be mended, so can the nation unite to protect its freedom. Will you commit to bringing calm and peace into a world during this age? We decide to be. The flash day of consciousness is, you and I have the resources of heaven available. If you have received Jesus Christ as your Lord and Savior, He lives in you. And He can do this through you if you choose to love. When the fire of anger is burning, you can douse it or you can stir it. Choose to respond rather than react.